Service. Ethics. Advocacy. Welcome to the AICPA Tax Section Podcast. The Tax Center provides guidance, information, and tax practice tools to support the three goals of the AICPA Tax Section Strategic Plan: practice support, professional standards and ethics, and Washington representation. The AICPA Tax Section Podcast is one more source of information on all things tax and tax-related. In this episode, William Stromson, Director of the AICPA Tax Division, will discuss current developments in tax law and practice.
Hello, this is Bill Stromson, a director with the AICPA Tax Team, with a Tax Section Audio Alert for October 27, 2009. These podcasts are based on emailed alerts that AICPA Tax Section members receive and that include hot links to source materials that I'll refer to in the audio version. Please consider joining the Tax Section to take full advantage of our practice alerts. You can join online at aicpa.org/tax. Today I'm going to cover inflation adjustments that the IRS is making for 2010, an expansion of the home equity indebtedness definition, an interesting favorable case on charitable contributions of historic easements, a case that strengthens the IRS position on tax accrual work papers, how employers should account for money placed in tip jars, partnership and S-Corp cancellation of indebtedness issues, check-the-box rules for LLCs that make gifts, retirement plan penalties, new procedures for changes in accounting methods, auto dealer unicap problems, suspended collection of the 6707A penalties, a controversial new temporary regulation on the six-year statute of limitations, and some expat rules. I'll also cover some legislative and regulatory comments made by the AICPA and some free and discounted benefits for being a Tax Section member. This should take about 25 minutes, so set the timer on your treadmill, and here we go with some tax news you can use. The IRS has released inflation adjustments figures for 2010. This was in Rev Proc 2009-50 and News Release 2009-93. Due to minimal inflation over the last 12 months and for the period ending September 30th, most of the various exemptions, brackets, retirement limits, and other inflation adjustment amounts remain unchanged or changed only slightly from last year. In a prior e-alert, we suggested that although a literal reading of the law might require a reduction in the amount of contributions that could be made to a 401k, we said we didn't think that would happen, and we turned out to be right. The maximum you can contribute will continue to be $16,500, and the annual present interest gift exclusion remains at $13,000, and the personal and dependency exemptions remain at $3,650. With respect to home equity indebtedness, the IRS Chief Counsel has released a legal memorandum. That's ILM 2009-40030. On whether indebtedness incurred in acquiring, constructing, or substantially improving any qualified residence could qualify for home mortgage indebtedness. The IRS concluded that this indebtedness can qualify even if there isn't a separate home equity loan. This is good news for home buyers in upper brackets who can now deduct interest on up to $1,100,000 of home mortgage interest even if there isn't a separate home equity loan taken out. But they do lose the flexibility that you have with the use of a home equity loan, which doesn't have to be used for home equity purposes, home acquisition, home improvement purposes, such as education or major purchases. An alternative to preserve this flexibility and still use your home equity might be to secure a business loan or investment loan with your home equity. And in that way, if it qualifies as a deductible interest expense under another provision, you could preserve the home equity indebtedness to the extent that there's any remaining to use for education or special large purchases. The tax court has issued an interesting ruling on a discount for a conservation easement. In Dorothy Jean Simmons versus Commissioner, the taxpayer granted an easement on two Washington, D.C. row houses to a historic preservation trust that was a 501c3 organization, and the taxpayer then claimed deductions of 11% and 13% for the reduction in value on those properties. However, the historic preservation laws already in the area prevented any material changes to the facades or improvements to these properties, so the IRS argued that the easements had no value. The tax court disagreed and permitted 5% discount for the burden of maintaining the eased facades. That included things like polishing the historic facade plaque and washing the building face periodically. The First Circuit has supported the IRS in a work papers issue. It was a divided issue. Three-court panel had come out the other way, but the full First Circuit reversed them and sided with the government. This is the Textron case where the company argued that work papers were protected by the attorney-client privilege work product doctrine, which protects documents from discovery if they're prepared in anticipation of litigation. The IRS argued that the attorney-client privilege had been waived because of disclosure to a third party, the company's outside auditor, and this is based on the Arthur Young decision from back in 1984. The IRS established a policy, though, of requiring work papers only when the information was not otherwise available in fairly easily, and only when they believe that there was some tax sheltering. They suspected there was some tax sheltering. The First Circuit noted that Textron had engaged in several listed transactions and supported the IRS's efforts to efficiently discover the full details. So this is a little bit of a blow to those who want to rely on attorney-client privilege in protecting work papers from disclosure. Note that that IRS policy of restraint didn't apply to state auditors and others who might want to discover the work papers. So I think the word is that we have to be cautious as to what we put in work papers and how we disclose them. The IRS has issued a memo on how to account for tip jars. This was in an IRS Chief Counsel Memorandum 2009-29004. It addresses the employer's tax filing responsibility with respect to those amounts. These are the jars that you see at the cashier where people put in their change or put in some tips. And the question really is whether these are monies that the employer collects and pays out to the employers, or whether these are monies that the employees themselves collect. The memo sets out rules for determining whether the employer has to include tips in the income of employees and how to deal with issues of withholding tax. It all comes down to control. If the employer collects a tip jar, counts the money, and distributes it to the employees, the tips are considered wages and the employer is subject to the normal rules for wages paid, including withholding and payment of employment taxes. However, if the employees themselves are responsible for dealing with the tips, and a non-management employee is responsible for counting tips, keeping the tips in a secure place, and distributing them equally to all eligible employees based on the number of hours worked, the wages are not subject to withholding by the employer. RevProc 2009-37 provides guidance on deferral of cancellation of indebtedness income. Practitioners considered this guidance favorable because a significant amount of flexibility is provided for partnerships. The procedure applies to all taxpayers, including partnerships and S corporations, which make an election at the entity level. Partnerships and S corporations are subject to specific annual election year reporting requirements. For partnerships, the entity can choose which of the partners will defer COD income, if any, and the amount each will defer. Taxpayers may also request the deferral of less or more than their total COD income. Presumably, the IRS provided the partial elections to address situations when taxpayers do not want to defer the entire amount of COD income, such as when some partners are interested in the deferral and others are not. For S-Corps, the procedure provides that cancellation of indebtedness income deferred is shared pro rata among the shareholders that are shareholders immediately before the reacquisition transaction. Another provision permits taxpayers to protect themselves in the event of an IRS audit, which later results in an increase in the amount of cancellation of indebtedness income. In Pierre versus Commissioner, the tax court made a decision on the effect of check-the-box regulations on LLC gifts for gift tax purposes. The court ruled in favor of the taxpayer that the income tax check-the-box regulations do not apply for gift tax purposes for valuing transfer of property held through a single-member LLC. The check-the-box regulation should not be applied to disregard an LLC in determining how a donor should be taxed under the federal gift tax provisions on a transfer of an ownership interest in an LLC. Instead, a single-member LLC should be recognized as a separate entity from its owner for federal gift tax purposes and allowed valuation discounts on the transfer of interest in the entity. The tax court held that the check-the-box regulations did not transform donations and sales of interest in a one-member New York LLC into transfers of the underlying cash and marketable securities in that LLC. The court determined that the state law, rather than the federal law, would determine the nature of the taxpayer's transferred ownership. For example, because New York state law recognizes the entity as being separate and apart from the owner, the transferred LLC ownership interests were subject to discounts for lack of control and lack of marketability, rather than being valued as direct transfers of undiscounted proportionate shares of the LLC's assets. In reaching the decision, the majority noted that the check-the-box regulations provided that they are to apply for federal tax purposes. The IRS argued that the regulations do not limit the application to federal income taxes. But the tax court rejected this argument, noting that courts have consistently held that states create the legal entities and interests and rights that are to be valued for purposes of federal estate and gift tax purposes. In holding that a single LLC member is not disregarded as an entity separate from its owner for gift tax purposes, the decision has broad implications for state transfer tax and international estate planning. Yeah, that's in addition to the gift and estate tax valuation considerations. For example, the decision supports the position that the state estate and inheritance tax purposes where the property is held through a single member LLC, the asset potentially subject to tax should be the LLC interest and not the property held by the LLC. Regarding international estate planning implications, this means that a non-resident alien could use a foreign disregarded entity to hold U.S. property and avoid U.S. estate taxes on what would otherwise be taxable U.S. situs property. The decision can also be read as contrary to the look-through approach that the IRS applies in determining estate and gift taxation of partnerships interests. This decision could be appealed to the Second Circuit, and the other alternative might be for the IRS to amend the check-the-box regulations. The AICP has recently become aware that the IRS is examining certain welfare benefit plans which have and have given them assessments of substantial penalties for failure to disclose a transaction which is substantially similar to a listed transaction. These retirement plans, which commonly involve cash value life insurance policies with required contributions that are significantly greater than the cost of providing the benefits, have previously received valid determination letters for the exemption. Under 6707A, the penalties assessed on such transactions are currently $100,000 per individual and $200,000 for other taxpayers without regard to the amount of tax in question or good faith efforts on the part of the taxpayer. There's a Senate bill that would allow a waiver of such penalty for failure to disclose reportable transactions if the failure was due to reasonable cause and not due to willful neglect. It would allow a revision in the amount of the penalty, and it would limit the imposition of the penalty to the taxpayer, currently any person. Commissioner Shulman stated in July that the IRS will not undertake any collection enforcement action on Section 6707A through September 30th, 2009, on cases where the annual tax benefit from the transactions does not exceed the penalties assessed. However, examination in these cases continues. By the way, the IRS has extended their holding in abeyance on the 6707A penalty until December 31st now. That's to give Congress time to consider legislation to reform the penalty and ensure that many taxpayers not otherwise intended to be impacted by the penalty are not caught up in its net. The IRS has changed procedures for accounting method changes, and its updated guidance in Rev. Proc. 2009-39, which provides guidance on automatic consents for accounting method changes and clarifies general procedures for obtaining non-automatic consents. In general, a taxpayer may not request an accounting method change when it's under examination. The updated revenue procedure includes changes to the earlier revenue procedure and adds to the definition of under examination. It also refers to changes in the filing requirements for an accounting method change, defines which issues mandate filing of a change in accounting method form, and provides guidance for specific accounting method changes when an automatic consent will not apply. It's an interesting issue with respect to auto dealers in UNICAP, and the IRS has suspended exams dealing with this issue. Many auto dealers have minimized capitalized costs in inventory using methodologies that the IRS does not believe comply with Section 263A. In TAM 2007-36026, the IRS National Office considered many issues surrounding UNICAP for an auto dealer, including a variety of production and handling issues, retail sales and facilities issues, and issues regarding identification and allocation of costs. The conclusions reached regarding the taxpayer in the TAM were not consistent with the treatment that has been taken by many taxpayers in the same industry with similar operations and has caused increased exam activities, leading to designation of auto dealership Section 263A issues as Tier 3 issues by the IRS. The IRS has temporarily suspended examination of 263A issues for auto dealerships in order to encourage compliance and permit taxpayers to voluntarily change their accounting methods. The suspension started on September 15, 2009, and the IRS will resume examinations on January 1, 2011, according to the memorandum from the IRS Large and Mid-Sized Business Divisions. Taxpayers should refer to Rev. Proc. 2008-52 and Rev. Proc. 97-27 to determine if their particular interest can request can be made under the automatic method change procedures or if it will require IRS advance consent. There are some controversial new temporary regulations on the six-year statute of limitations that the IRS issued recently. They define an omission from gross income for purposes of a six-year statute of limitations. And according to the temporary regulations, an overstatement of basis in a sold asset can result in an omission of gross income. Since the IRS unsuccessfully argued similar positions in the Ninth and federal and other federal circuits earlier this year, the guidance is expected to trigger discontent, controversy, and additional litigation. The temporary regulations apply to taxable years with respect to which the six-year statute did not expire before September 24, 2009. The IRS has issued some interim guidance for expats in Notice 2009-85, providing long-awaited guidance under Section 877A that applies to individuals who expatriate on or after June 17, 2008. The notice also covers corresponding rules for reporting under 6039G. As reported in earlier e-alerts, Section 877A replaces the old 10-year-old alternative tax regime on U.S. source income of covered expatriates with a mark-to-market tax on gains in excess of $626,000 exclusion from a deemed sale of an individual's worldwide assets on the day before the individual's expatriation date. However, the individual may elect to defer payment of the tax by providing security and waiving treaty rights that would prevent assessment or collection of tax on deferred income. The new rule applies to expatriations occurring on or after June 17, 2008. The notice provides rules for determining whether an individual is covered as an expatriate and thus subject to the new Section 877A rules. how the mark-to-market regime operates, and other implementation details. The AICB has been representing the CPA tax practitioner interests in Washington, and let me give you a few of the things that we've done recently. We commented on the IRS review of tax return preparers in response to Notice 2009-60, which solicited information from tax practitioners about current oversight, improved monitoring of preparers, education and training, and ethical standards. We emphasized four key points. The AICB supports efforts to ensure practitioners are qualified, ethical, and provide good services. We agreed that the IRS strategic plan's recognition that tax professionals play a key role in sustaining the nation's voluntary compliance tax system. We believe that the IRS has the necessary authority to regulate federal tax return preparers under the current penalty structure, Circular 230, and implementation of one unique identification number system for all tax return preparers in order to track interactions with the IRS. And we strongly advised against imposing duplicative regulatory processes on CPAs, attorneys, and enrolled agents, and other professionals already subject to Circular 230. The IRS proposed review, which was announced by Commissioner Shulman in June, is intended to ensure uniform and high ethical standards of conduct for tax preparers, as well as increased compliance by taxpayers. Separately, the AICB has urged civil penalty reform, we continue to do so. We submitted a report on civil penalties, the need for reform, in which we urged Congress, Treasury, and the IRS to work with taxpayers, practitioners, and professional organizations and other stakeholders to improve civil penalties. Our report noted that targeted, proportionate penalties that clearly articulate standards of behavior and that are administered in an even-handed and reasonable manner are needed to encourage voluntary tax compliance. And the AICB will continue to work for a rational civil penalty tax system. The AICB has sought clarification of guidance on reducing S-Corp shareholder bases by non-deductible items and on S-Corp exemption to treating a payment as a golden parachute. The AICB has testified at some recent hearings on fundamental tax reform. On October 16th, AICB President Barry Melanson testified before the President's Economic Recovery Advisory Board's panel on tax reform. He stressed the need for simplification and specifically discussed AICPA recommendations for simplifying the alternative minimum tax and reforming estate and gift taxes. He also commented on various legislative proposals that the AICPA has previously submitted to tax writing committees to promote simplification and fairness and to correct certain perceived technical problems in the Internal Revenue Code. In addition, he mentioned the civil penalty reform proposals that we've had. Finally, in connection with his testimony, he presented the AICPA's new publication, Tax Reform Alternatives for the 21st Century, the older AICPA's Tax Policy Concept Statements 1 through 4, our recommendations to simplify the AMT and to reform the estate and gift taxes, the AICPA Compendium of Legislative Proposals, and the AICPA's reports on civil penalties and need to reform them. I just mentioned the new publication the AICPA has released, the Tax Reform Alternatives for the 21st Century. It's a white paper developed to serve as a resource for those engaged or interested in current tax reform debate. Its objectives are to provide policymakers and other interested individuals with a clear understanding of the issues and alternatives involved in federal tax reform and to foster informed discussions by providing unbiased information and analysis. The publication describes the nature of the issues leading to tax reform debate, suggests a balanced approach for analyzing tax reform proposals, and summarizes key issues to be addressed. This is an update of an older AICPA publication going back to 2005. Here's some of the benefits that we've put out recently for tax section members. There's a tax software survey, and the results are available online either from the Tax Advisor website or the Journal of Accountancy website. We've put out a foreign tax credit filing chart for tax-exempt organizations. It's a simple and concise chart on filing requirements for miscellaneous forms relating to foreign filings, and it's now available on the ASCPA Tax Center website. Chart will help determine filing requirements and miscellaneous forms such as Form 926, that's a return by U.S. transfer of property to a foreign corporation, Form 5471, the information return for a U.S. Person with respect to foreign corporations, Form 8621, the return by shareholder of a passive foreign investment company or qualified electing fund, and Form 1116 on foreign tax credits, as well as some other forms. We've had some discounts on various programs. There's a discount on the Sophisticated Tax Planning for Wealthy Clients Conference. It's $100. That's going to be in New York on November 16th and 17th. We had a 20% discount on an IFRS conference for tax section members. That's International Financial Reporting Standards in North America 2009, a U.S. perspective. It's going to be held at the end of October, again in New York City. And with the SEC's renewed interest in the IFRS roadmap, now this is the time that a lot of practitioners need to start taking a look at this and be able to be prepared to serve their clients. We had some discounts on some accreditation exams in preparation. That includes personal financial planning and accredited business valuations. We had a free estate planning outline and checklist and client letter. Those were coming out of a Sid Kess workshop, and they're available again at the tax section website without charge. The tax section also has a discount on a nice publication. It's a called the 2010 Cumulative Tax Guide. It's a handy reference that includes the past 12 months worth of new and updated legislative developments, regulatory developments, and court decisions. It's over 600 pages long, and tax section members get a 20% discount. That brings the price to $103 instead of $129. And finally, we had a discount on attending the Real Estate Tax Conference. That's going to be down in New Orleans, November 9th and 10th. There's a tax track with a lot of real estate tax issues covered, the partnership cancellation of indebtedness issue that I described earlier, like-kind exchanges, tax planning for developers and businesses, real estate tax planning update, strategies and tips, real estate compliance, and tax aspects of workouts and foreclosures. There are 30 concurrent sessions with cases, industry panels, and Ask the Expert panels, and you can register online. Well, that's it for this e-alert. Thanks for listening, and hope you're starting to have a very good year in tax planning period. Thanks. I'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AICPA Tax Section Podcast. Join the tax section and receive emailed alerts with links to many of the source documents referenced in this podcast. And be sure to tune in next time for even more coverage of all things tax and tax related.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA makes no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assumes no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaims all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.